This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.
David Morgan with you for the week ending the 27th of October, 2017. Well, first up from CNBC, headline is, get ready for a substantial slowdown in the U.S. economy, investment bank predicts. This is an Taxis bank from France, and it urges investors to prepare for the U.S. economy to slow down substantially as early as 2018. We at the Morgan Report believe we're actually in a recession, but the way the metrics are performed, we need to see a couple of quarters officially at a certain level before there's a quote-unquote official recession. Regardless of that, stock market continues to make new highs, as reported last week, and many that are in the middle class, what's left of it, see the quite obvious fact that the financial markets are no way representing the physical reality of the economy itself. One other point on this article, which I thought was interesting, as it says, and none of the major banks see a recession on the horizon. And yet I just said, I think we're already in one. Time will tell. It's interesting how the mainstream press characterizes some of this stuff. They kind of talk out of both sides of their mouth, obviously. But nonetheless, the facts remain. And looking at how the economy and politics mix, this is from ABC News. Singapore, U.S. effort to open markets may come to grief. Singapore's prime minister has raised doubts over the Trump administration's trade policy. Prime Minister Lee Hsien Loong says the United States' withdrawal from the Trans-Pacific Trade Agreement has hurt U.S. credibility. You can read the rest. He was speaking to the Council on Foreign Relations. No big guesswork involved there. But the controllers at large certainly want things to go as they have outlined. And, of course, there is some resistance here and there. Whether Trump is real resistance or unknown opposition or really goes along for the ride, I'll let you make up your own determination on that. And more verification of the overall debt situation. This is from Reuters. It was printed in the New York Times. Worldwide debt more than triple economic output as central bank shift looms. Out of Reuters again, London. Worldwide debt has risen to a record $226 trillion, more than three times global annual economic output. And firms in more countries are struggling to service loans, a study shows, just as key central banks prepare to end super cheap credit policies. World markets are expected to get confirmation over the next week that normalizing global interest rates from the extraordinarily low levels introduced to offset the fallout of the 2009 credit crash is no longer just a U.S. phenomena. The European Central Bank will lay out cuts on its 2.5-year-old stimulus program on Thursday. The Bank of England looks to set to raise British interest rates for the first time in a decade, while the Fed is moving towards its third hike of the year. Again, very interesting times. Always said, concentrated on the debt markets, the bond markets. That holds a key to the future of the global economy. And one of the most important topics that's been discussed almost ad infinitum over many of the gold and oil websites has to do with this reserve currency situation known as the petro yuan. This is from Zero Hedge. Earlier in the week, we, meaning Zero Hedge, pointed out the petro yuan is on the verge of becoming reality, noting that the birth of yuan-denominated oil contract will be, quote-unquote, a huge story in the fourth quarter and will be a wake-up call for investors who haven't paid attention to the plans. Shows how the reserve currency status doesn't last forever. It's gone, looking from about the 14th century to present day, from Portugal to Spain to the Netherlands to France to Britain to the U.S., and I would suggest it has or is going to China. And of course, this article is making that point as well. The proposed yuan denominated current futures oil contract is very significant. It removes the status of the petrodollar, which has dominated since basically the early 70s to most recent times currently. Of course, it's been weakening as there's been trade deals done by other nation states of significant power, such as Russia and China. The BRICS that have actually removed themselves from many trade deals and dealt direct with their own currencies. Nonetheless, this will exacerbate the situation a great deal, meaning it will accelerate, probably become most noteworthy to those that trade in the oil sector, which is just about everybody on an indirect basis. So very significant, and I think I'll leave it at that. We'll continue to report as it develops further. And looking at something that should be important to all of us, and that is the children. I know that's overused, but the children are extremely important. And this is from RT, which I was told, I think it's true. I haven't determined it. I just got back from the New Orleans show. Regardless, that RT, I think, has been removed from their Twitter account. But again, you can check that. Coming back on point, this is from RT, Russia Today. That's why I mentioned it. 2/3 of U.S. baby foods test positive for arsenic. Many contained lead and cadmium. Very upsetting. I read the whole article. I'll just read you the headline, but the whole food system, the GMO structure, the air, the water, everything's basically been corrupted. Nothing's really working as it should. In the political realm, geopolitical realm, almost any industry, there's corruption from top to bottom, almost everywhere, with very few exceptions. And this is our reality. And from that, I'm going to move into a little bit of what I spoke at in the New Orleans Investment Conference here just a couple days ago. I won't go through everything, but I'll start off the the speech with the idea that the major monetary metal in history is silver, not gold. This was done at the James Blanchard's 20th anniversary conference in New Orleans. I was standing there in New Orleans many years later. As you know, it's 2017, but this is a fact. Many dispute it, but nonetheless, it remains true. I briefly went over silver's price throughout history in constant dollars. So you can see here in the 13th century, it's around the $400 level or higher. And then from the 15th century to, say, the 17th, roughly around the $200 level. Again, we're looking at inflation-adjusted prices. And then if you look at the 1800s, roughly, you're looking at, $90 or so. And then, of course, it was demonetized in the crime of 1873, and we've got these big excursions. It's also interesting, if I know this graph's hard to see, but nonetheless, is how stable the gold-silver ratio was for hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds of years, and how it became unstable from the crime of 1873 to present day. And I took a great deal of time talking about how the deficit from 1990 through 2006 ate away 1.5 billion ounces of silver from the above-ground supplies, and how that has been building up since 2006 onward. I took this quote directly out of the World Silver Survey, which is produced by GFMS and the Silver Institute. And this, again, is a direct quote. Identifiable above-ground stocks increased 14% year-on-year to 2.5 billion ounces by the end of last year. These inventories could cover 30 months worth of physical demand, a 21-year peak. This seemed to really upset a lot of people. I'm here not to be an apologist for silver. I certainly think it's still a great investment because of investment demand and the other uses, of course. But this is something that very few seem to acknowledge that are out there in the main commentary. Everyone hears there's a shortage, there's a deficit, it's eaten away, it's gone, there isn't any, it's depleted on all that, and this just simply isn't true. The facts are, it was depleting at a substantial rate, about 100 million ounces on an annual basis for about 15 years, and it's been rebuilding at about that same rate for the last 10, maybe slightly higher. Again, this is from the World Silver Survey, and it shows the amount of usage of silver broken down. Photography is 7% or so. Jewelry, silverware, 33%. Electronics, 25%. Solar technology, about 10%. And then other uses, which is makes me laugh. I mean, that's basically your coin and bar demand, 23%. And this is another point I made about the silver market balance. And what you find here is the deficit that I talked about. that ate the above ground stockpile down to about 500 million ounces. And that took place at the end of 2005, early 2006. And at that point, we were at the lowest above ground supply of silver in a very long time, if not forever, I don't know, but for a very long time anyway, I can say that safely. And yet you can look at the silver price, and at that time of that low, the price was really somewhere around the $12 level. Then we were building up for 2006, 7, 8, 9, 10, and 11, and we get a price peak up around this level, which is, as we know, it says 35 here, but really touched 50. So what I made the point is that there is a very little correlation from a long-term perspective of supply and demand versus price. In other words, the price really doesn't follow the above ground supply very well at all in any way. And this, of course, upsets people as well. Well, this goes into two things, the manipulation, which I have a whole chapter in the Silver Manifesto. You can read yourself and go through and study it. It's not a one-time chapter to read. It's not Econ 101, contrary to some of the comments on Amazon, but I digress. And the exchange-traded funds, most of these are holding companies, have been flat, around 600 million ounces here. And that is because really silver hasn't been performing that well price-wise for quite some time. And I'll wrap up this weekly perspective with this. It shows silver's share of global financial wealth. And you can see that basically we're at about 0.02% of all wealth. This is from CPM Group. This is from Jeff Christian that gave this lecture basically at the Silver Summit last year, which is coming up in another month or so. And right now it's actually less than that. You know, if you look at 2016, the end of the year, it's like 0.0125%. Regardless, this is why one of the several reasons, but one of the primary reasons is that monetary investment demand for silver is so small right now relative to the global economy. The above ground supply, although it's grown in the last 10 years, is pitifully small relative to the above ground gold supply. And yet gold is at like 75 times the price of silver. So you figure it out. If you think building inventory is a negative to silver, and it is slightly, you've got to use the same argument about gold. And if you think about it on gold terms, gold's above ground wealth, since it's priced 75 times higher per unit than silver, you'll determine that it is about 1% of the world's financial global wealth. And silver, of course, much, much less. So I'm still very bullish on it, basis the fact that all debt bombs explode. I think we're seeing a slow explosion in the debt markets, especially what's going on in the junk bond corporates right now. And of course, government guarantee type of situations are still holding their own, again, for the time being. So I'm going to wrap it up there with the weekly perspective with David Morgan. Please take this podcast to heart and pass it on to your friends, family, and those you care about. I try to keep these to 10 minutes or so. Rarely do they go beyond 15 minutes.
This is the Morgan Report with David Morgan. For the latest in precious metals investing, gold, silver, the economy, and more, go to themorganreport.com.